administrative comment is over. There may be a question, of course, that will be posed to various branches of government that may be here today for various budgets. I hope you have the materials on your desk. Maybe they're still up front here. If they're still up front, may they be distributed first time around. But these all need to be distributed. These need to be distributed. They're awesome. Put them on Senator Ewing's desk, too, if you have them. I guess you have.
Could you please, Senator?
Senator Johnson said he didn't use the copy.
DOT looks a little fat there, though.
Very fat.
Yeah.
Here.
Pass these around.
I've asked Carol to prepare the briefing in printed manner, as most of you handed out, but I'll start. Carol, if you want to hand out the briefing materials to everybody. DOT. This pact of intents was developed and a number of the subcommittee members worked on intents, and Senator Schultz was particularly helpful in developing them. Steve Sinkson, who's had a lot of time in my office. Others have intents.
Hey, Ben, he was
very big budget. Very important to the state. As a general rule, the 2% vacancy reduction is restored in other funding sources as in the governor's amended. In places where the governor restored general fund, the Senate did not allow the restoration administrative components. General funds were restored in all direct service delivery components. Again, as a general rule, the governor's health benefit adjustment was not allowed, but then was by the governor, but was added back to the Senate in all components. The 10% deduction of the governor was accepted in all components. In order not to request new positions where they felt they need them, DOT found positions in the budget which were vacant in order to transfer to other components and reclassify where a need exists. This has happened throughout this budget. I think it takes substantial time and effort of the legislature, as co-chairman is known to, really get in the bowels of vacancies that do exist, and I think the administration itself is looking to check on a whole array of DOT positions and how they relate all the way down from the top to the actual people working in road maintenance. This budget proposal fully funds Class 3 roads and rural airports. And to this, we've added, and so did the House, of course, $2,343,000 for Class 3 roads and $4,025,000 for rural airports. We felt one of the basic services government should provide is transportation. In the past, there's been too little appropriated for these basic services. And although aviation fuel tax increase may be a reasonable idea, no legislation has passed to increase this tax. It's my belief that increase in this tax would be more fair than instituting landing fees or increasing airport fees in rural areas. It is my belief that Class 3 roads, nonetheless, that is yet to come. It is my belief that Class 3 roads are the state's responsibility in such time that the state brings these roads up to standard and consistency and consistently funds their maintenance. These road responsibilities should not be passed to local governments. my proposal to our proposal, committee proposal, to increase the maintenance budgets in all departments by bringing the governor's deferred maintenance capital proposal in the operating budget where it belongs. This budget has added $7.7 million throughout the regions in order that the state may begin to hold the line on deterioration of state roads. It isn't the administration that recognizes that they have a capital. We have it back in maintenance where it should be annually compared to the previous. It is operating budget. The budget proposal has also accepted the governor's request for increments in maintenance operation components for new facility maintenance in the amount of 1.4. This will help the dilution of the department's ability to do its job in an acceptable manner. The budget also brings back Marine Highway overhaul function. It's put in the operating budget. The budget proposal accepts the governor's funding source switch from general fund to general fund program receipts of $2 million for maintenance of the Dalton Highway. The department is relatively optimistic that use the highway will agree to help maintain the Dalton. In addition, the lapse date for the M&O components has been extended to August 31st, 92 to allow sufficient time during the spring and summer months to complete deferred maintenance activities. The Marine Highway System for 92 will be funded from the Marine Highway Fund. The Marine Highway Fund was established in 91 to hold revenues earned by the ferry system during that year. In addition, a stabilization amount will be needed to be appropriated from the General Fund and Marine Highway Fund to make up the difference in what the ferry system earns and what needs to provide ferry system. In this proposal, the ferry system will require $73.3 million to provide a continuing level of service. This will require that the amount of fund at the end of fiscal year 91, $37.4 million, and $35.9 million from general fund will need to be appropriated for 92. The $35.9 million will be appropriated in the front section of the operating bill. That is the reason that the governor's proposal may seem like he's appropriating more funds than we are, but we are higher than the governor's. The governor's proposal will cost, because we are only dealing with general fund in the budget itself. The governor's proposal will cost $74 million, of which $4.2 million required in the capital budget for overhaul. $69.8 million will be appropriated from the Marine Highway Fund. The governor's front section stabilization amount is $31.3 million. Which means about $1.2 million amount earned in 92 will be used to operate the ferries. The Senate proposal does not utilize these fiscal year 92 revenues. It allows for the accumulation of earnings for 93. By doing this, it is reasonable to expect the Marine Stabilization Fund can reduce 93. It's always supposed to be the following year, in fact, 1 year to provide for the next. Generally speaking, the increases here really are taking from capital, putting back into operating. We have a series of, and that is the difference between us and the governors as a whole. It's maintenance, deferred maintenance and maintenance. We felt if we cut in the upper levels or didn't provide them some of the basic fundings that were requested by the department, it would be reflected all the way back down into the maintenance divisions as we've seen in the past. In order to get maintenance, we funded it and we didn't make deletions in the commissioner's components and in the leadership components. I do think probably a thorough review of this budget is in order. I think the administration, speaking to the governor, is inclined to go through a number of different departments to make certain that they're cost effective. I can't say that they're not, but there is a feeling that there probably are people that were brought on during the time that we had a substantial amount of money available that remain now. They're contributing maybe not as much as they ought to. Maybe some of those jobs can be combined. Are there any questions? You have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I just had just a couple of real small questions. The first is on this HIDER intent language. Is there a particular problem? Where did the 92,000 figure come from for the HIDER road maintenance?
There's a Senate request for HIDER road maintenance. Carol, do you remember what Senator brought in?
We could guess.
Jones. Excuse me, please sit with me. Come forward.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's Senator Jones. That is correct. Senator Jones requested a number of amendments to the budget, and this is the one that we acknowledged. Made some phone calls and acknowledged that
was
the senator had a particular condition, shouldn't be ignored, and this is the one we put into Senator Jones. We did it with, we had added maintenance to southeast component and allowed for that as intended.
Mr. Chairman, the intent language on page 33.
You want to take it out?
This, Mr. Chairman, I think we're all, this is an old battle, a major difference of opinion. And I'm not going to get through the whole thing, but when you say that a greater proportion of the federal highway monies should be utilized on connector routes and rural routes, that means you're directing federal highway funds out of my district. And there are...
Well, you do have some rural reaches of your district.
But it's well known that we do use federal highway funds in urban areas on like Egan Expressway, the Fairbanks routes, and the Glen and Seward highways in particular through Anchorage. They do cost a lot of money. They do have high ADT figures, higher than, you know, anywhere in the state generally. And that there's this, you know, if you just look at needs, and Senator Hoffman and I have had this debate for years, there, you know, when it comes right down to it, more cars, there's more needs. And that's why you have some elements of the federal highway program going into urban areas. And, you know, we all criticize DOT and their prioritizations. We look at those every year on when we authorize federal aid projects in the budget. And I guess I object to the inclusion of that express intent language. And I would rather we look at those prioritizations as we debate DOT in the six-year plan and as we debate them in the authorizations for federal highway projects within the capital budget. I don't think that this is necessarily a true statement that this needs to be done, nor do I think it's particularly equitable. I think you have to look at where the needs are, and sometimes they do lie on major roads in urban areas.
The new Federal Highway Act provides for decisions to be made in this regard, which is the reason we invested to it here. Frankly, we ran some figures on allocations of central district, and roads have to do with geography, have to do with transport of products, have to do with population. We found a very large amount of federal aid funds going within the city limits for a long period of time. It's a continuing battle. The people that make the road decisions live in that city. You see the potholes there. They don't get out of the town from examine and check. There's a strong suspicion that on any equity basis from Homer to Cantwell, those regions lying around the major urban area weren't getting sufficient attention. I personally have that opinion. Let alone the other far reaches of the district, which I think go throughout Senator Hopkins area. Now, it's a 15% maximum in my memory, stand to be corrected, for this type of road program, so there is a damper on any federal funding allocations that could go toward this purpose. We didn't give direction, or we didn't specify. But we want, I feel, for one, and so did the subcommittee unanimously, feel that at least we ought to have a look at what could be done with federal aid funding. In particular, it looks like by this year and maybe the next year, out of the Highway Trust, there will be some additional funds coming in to federal aid. And we want to bring their attention that we too have highway needs, and we aren't the Latin American Republic where you build everything up in the community and then you end up on both ends of the community on a muddy road. Or no road at all, so to speak. And that was the chairman's point of view, obviously, but it was the unanimous point of view of the committee. Yes, of course, and I'll be doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would applaud the chairman in putting this intent language in. Over the course of years, I think that the state of Alaska does have responsibilities to roads such as the expressway, but the Egan Expressway. But the Egan Expressway is not an urban road. The problem that I see in DOT, and it came up in testimony at the committee level, is that the state of Alaska's federal highway fund program in the past years has been basically structured to to repair existing urban roads and other roads that have been built because of lack of maintenance. And I think that that the chairman's budget here is trying to correct that issue, and we should be concentrating on other roads. We do have a waiver from the federal government on the way we can spend dollars. We are spending way more than three times the money that we would be allowed to if we did not have the waiver on urban roads. And I feel that if we did not have the waiver, we would be getting, we would be following this this intent. It's, you know, and I agree with Senator Pichot. There's a difference in opinion between him and I on where those dollars should be going, but I strongly believe that we should be developing roads throughout the state of Alaska with those dollars. That's the intent. The intent is not to use the dollars on an annual basis to reconstruct existing roads year after year because we do not have adequate maintenance of those roads.
In this corner.
Chairman.
Yeah, Forrest. Senator, you.
Thank you. Well, number one, I think we're making a pretty strong statement. Number one, in the amount of money that's going into both the Class 3 roads and the rural airports and the dollar amounts that are going in there. I'd like to ask a question of DOT. If we have somebody that can answer regarding this intent language, how are they going to? How would they view this intent language? And then I'd like to make a suggestion.
Deputy Commissioner, would you like to come up with the commission? Deputy Commissioner.
It doesn't mean anything.
We're going to make a decision. We're going to make a decision right now.
How about asking the Deputy Commissioner to come up?
The Deputy Commissioner can come up, whoever it is.
I would like the Deputy Commissioner to come up. He was involved in the budget process, and I know the Commissioner's got anything to do, and it's just one corner of his responsibility. I do want to say that I brought in, and this is a book on allocations, last year's studies, on Class 3 roads. You know, we took Class 3 roads in Anchorage, we upgraded them to Class 2 or higher. We didn't do it out of town. We had a lot of them here just recently. But anyway, I've got a report by a former project engineer, former chief of planning. He did it for me during last summer on this subject. So I know where allocations have gone for a period of time. I also had a CPA accountant 2 years ago run through this thing at the Anchorage DOT. And that's the reason that I've come to the conclusion I have. I'm not without backup for my conclusion. Do you have the floor, though, Senator, or Mr. Commissioner, if you wish to come up?
Sir. I'm afraid I won't shed much light on this, but as you know, we're trying to put together a transportation plan for the state, which we hope we will have completed later this summer. And once we have a plan and we can look at that and follow the good thought process and how we spend our transportation money most effectively, I think we will resolve a lot of the concern and a lot of the doubts of where the money will be invested. That's all I can offer at this time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask Mr. Gerken a quick question? Mr. Gerken? Mr. Gerken, how would you view it if the intent of the legislature was essentially to say a greater portion of the attention be focused on the connector routes and rural roads? I mean, is that something that you have any control over? Is that pretty much federal funding? Or how would it be viewed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ewing, as Senator Hoffman pointed out, the federal act is that we operate under currently, and we assume the one we'll operate under starting in 92 when the Congress rewrites that, allows us almost total flexibility as to how those monies are earned versus how they're spent. And that is different in other states. They have to spend their secondary money on secondary roads, primary money on primary roads, and on like that. So we have a fair amount of flexibility. And if you will, that puts us in a position of having to have a process to justify how that money best gets spent, which is the problem with the greatest need. We're talking about the equitable distribution of a fixed pie. I think it's probably fair to say that if the president or at least one of the bills in Congress right now passes for the new act, that pie is going to be a lot bigger. and it's going to be a lot easier for people to think that they're getting what they deserve because there'll be more of it to go around. And the smaller that gets, the more difficult that problem gets. I mean, the commissioner's absolutely right. The state transportation plan is principally to look at equity and a financial plan, a way to identify the need to which you direct your first dollar. And that prioritization is a very public process. It involves a lot of people. It involves the municipal government. It involves the legislature. And there's no one simple change in direction that is going to say we would start spending more money on a particular category of road. The condition of those roads, the volume of traffic on those roads, and the purposes that those roads serve are all part of the ingredients by which those decisions get made.
I want to read just a paragraph from the report I have here from former chief planning, an engineer, civil engineer, with lots and lots of road experience. I first met him when we were on the project that went to McCarthy. AMAPS, an influence on central region project program. The central region typically receives 43% of the state's share of federal aid highway funding. The AMAPS portion of the central region is about 52% of the regional allocation according to public six-year capital improvement programs. However, during the last 10 years, AMAPS actually received over 70% of the funds spent on construction. This represents a shortage of expenditures in the rest of the region of about $165 million. Based upon population, this recommendation and road mileage distribution, the AMAPS area should be allocated no more than 50% of the regional allocation. The CIP should have more continuity and should be considered as a budget and time document. There needs to be no protection for projects outside the influence of AMAS. The regional director should be accountable for reasonable distribution projects over the long term. I can go on and on into this thing. And I did not preconceive. I handed this guy an assignment and said, go out and find out what's going on. And this is the second of two assignments over a four-year period by people with competence and knowledge and experience. I mean, I find everything from the Hammond administration telling me that guys designing and constructing roads in Anchorage actually, and this is really critical, accommodated many of their own personal experiences and interests in these areas, and the rest of us could devil take the hindermost here. I don't know what the answer is. I am not suggesting a change in this budget. Actually, I'm transferring governor's capital, which is project money, back into operational, which I think the co-chairman even is very much in agreement with that. We know where it's been, where it's going, and how it's been expended. We see it here in a short period of time. But it did lead me to writing this intent suggestion. There's modifications that still bring to the attention of the administration the fact that there's a hell of a lot of road out there that needs a look at it quite as much as downtown Anchorage and Fairbanks. I'll go with you. And that's all I have to say about it. Senator Ewing?
Mr. Chairman, I...
Department of Natural Resources, the time for the public involvement, the time for administrative involvement is over. Before the full committee of finance, we've handed out intent suggestions, one DNR operating budget amendment by Senator Fahrenkamp suggestion, and as a general rule, we accepted the governor's cuts to administrative components. We accepted the governor's 10% travel cuts in general fund funding source in all components. Excuse me, I'll wait, Senator, for shows. Started, not at all.
It's always late.
DNR budget is before us. Very substantial backups there. Again, as in Department of Natural Resources, we accepted the governor's cuts to administrative components. We accepted the governor's 10% travel cuts in general fund funding source in all components. The governor's health benefit adjustment was not allowed and was restored by the Senate in all components. We accept the department's recommendation to merge the CIP components with their managerial components. I am following from a slightly different dialogue than the one in front of you. New possessions were in the pipeline coordinator's office, which were approved by LBNA and will be funded by program receipts collected from contractual agreements with Alyeska and Yukon Pacific pipeline companies. Those are 9 positions to be paid with program receipts. It's for the natural gas pipeline. That's an interesting methodology, but I think they've decided to expedite that program. There is no cost to us. We went into the law section, and when the just to add one other component, when the Attorney General was requesting additional lawyers, we suggested that any legal portion of this division also be borne by the CFX and those people involved in the pipeline construction. There was an agreement. We spread the miscellaneous reductions of 182.9 in the Division of Mining Management as suggested by that division. Those were governor's cuts. This accounts for the difference in positions between the governor's amended and the Senate figure, 3 permanent full-times between 3 permanent part-times. We stored several positions in direct service areas, land, water, forestry, and parks. We added funding for the implementation of HB 93's Susitna Recreational Plan. We were very careful in additions. We only provided 1 full-time, 1 part-time position. And they were requested particularly by Senators Cotton and Menard. We also increased the program receipt authority to allow the department to collect a fee from the Chittenden Depositors in order to negotiate with the Chittenden Native Corporation, which is a separate area, but nonetheless one that's been very controversial. And the next page, following your track here, we decreased program receipt authority in the homestead program because they'd never collected more than $20,000 a year. There will be a $30,000 remaining in the base. Forest management, we accepted governor's cuts, but we restored Tok and Big Lake foresters requested by Senators Schultz and Menard. In petroleum management, we accepted the governor's cuts, and we do not include the annualization of the new 8 new positions. And we do not include the amended amount for software maintenance. Again, back to the mining, we accepted the governor's cuts. Geologic management, we accepted the governor's cuts except into the sand and gravel project, and we reinstated his cut of the Kenai Groundwater Phase 3. This project is the final phase of a larger project which has had private and municipal funding in order to deal with the groundwater problems in Kenai. The final phase, the most detailed mapping of the area in order to identify the natural elements in groundwater on the Kenai for drinkable water wells. I suggest this restoration was suggested by Senator Bernard, but I do support it. What we have out there is we could have 470 funds if they had listed the problem correctly, but the way it's been listed, my understanding is 470 funds probably would not be available. Those areas that have been contaminated by dumps and oil efforts, probably 470 funds would be appropriate. But the methodology of requesting this study for drinking water and so on just made it impossible to use 470 funds in our opinion. Fire suppression, we maintain at the fiscal year 91 level. They will always come in for a supplemental if they need it, and we will always have to fund it. That's the arrangement between the feds and the state. Historic resource management, restore general funds, matching funds, increase the contractual line to fund 4 student interns, restored the position vetoed, and that was the one-time grant to fund the Alaska Historic Society's U.S. Bering Chirikov 91 Committee. This program includes a number of Alaska communities from Aleutian Chain through South Central regions. Parks Management accepted the governor's cut, transferred $50,000 from personal service to contractual to ensure there is enough funding in contractual for park maintenance, equipment, and the cleaning of facilities. We restored Cooper Landing Ranger, restored part-time ranger Kane's Head. Parks Management restored veto grants as requested. We restored the veto grants columns as requested by Senators Ewing, Pierce, Duncan, Menard, Curtula. Corrected an OMB error of $187,000, which was deleted by an inadvertent placement of a minus sign as a request of OMB, or at least the administration. And in agricultural management, I did not accept the governor's cuts, restored the Water Conservation Board, disallowed the decrease in months to scientific research staff at PMC. They decreased it from 12 to 10. It won't work. Those scientists will go elsewhere in time, and they are needed there. Disallowed the miscellaneous land. They had reduced them way beyond the normal 5%. They went back and taken second bite. Disallowed the miscellaneous line item reductions. Transferred half of the funding source for departmental administrative, half of it, to general fund from LRF. There's no other component that's using up their revolving loan funds in to administer more than the part of the operation that comes from the fund. That part is accessible to the fund, but not to operating the whole department we allowed. State fairs returned funding to fiscal year 91 level, and Senate fiscal year 92 general fund was $47,684,000. The Senate cap was $47,797. We also reduced, and it's controversial, reduced one of the two special assistants, which is at the top of your page, but I started on a different sheet. We accepted one of the, we reduced one of the two governor's special assistants. However, the commissioner's special assistants. However, the commissioner had reduced the administrative request, or by his own interests, in some combination of two, his deputy commissioner previously, and he feels extremely impacted by that reduction. I think there have been letters to some members. Are there any questions? You have the floor, Senator Schultz.
Just one question back on the first page. On House Bill 93 on the recreational rivers management, the $65,000.
Yes.
I was just wondering on that. With my understanding, and I can't remember when the first legislation passed, but it must have been about 4 years ago in that vicinity. And it was my understanding that when we implemented the recreational river legislation, that it was exclusively for a particular drainage, and there was no ability to be able to add other drainages onto it unless it was a separate piece of legislation. It was also my understanding at that time, when I was sitting on the resource committee, that the management of that river was going to be made up of a consortium of users, fishermen, miners, people in that area, and that there was no management monies going to be sought. Maybe this is something that has.
Well, this is what they tell me. They tell me they need to sign it. They need to do work out in the field. I didn't allow for the administrative overhead. It was actually people out there setting up signs so people know where they can, where they can't use the heavy, substantial, big motors, big boats.
Sure.
They just had to get out there, and according to Menard, who put a lot of time in it with Chairman Resources last year, and Sam Cotton back to back, but it's primarily Menard that carried the messages back up to our group. They had to have the funding in order to just, if they're going to get this program going at all, it had to get underway. And it's causing a lot of misinformation concern up there, and it's pretty much a playground for other than my own district. I mean,
sure.
My own district uses it, but it's really a playground for the other areas, and they felt that everything from salmon spawning problems to just overuse of the river was occurring with this big equipment. People need to know what was right and what was wrong according to law. And that's really the reason we put it in. There may be some staff contribution here if you want it.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering on that. I anticipipated that, you know, that maybe it would happen in the future. That in order to manage a stream for recreational purposes, you got conflicting user groups utilizing it, and you would need some money to, like you say, go in and...
I just cut it as tight as I could. Their original request was for administrative and, you know, a kind of a little agency, and we reduced it to the people in the field, essentially. Just getting some signs put up, put them out there, and maybe travel those rivers a few times to instruct people on the areas. I thought it made sense. It wasn't something, though, I was personally pushing. I haven't really been much involved in the Rec Rivers program.
I can understand the need for it. I just wondering.
Senator Duncan?
Yeah. Just one comment, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to, I have received a copy of the letter from the commissioner concerning the reduction in the commissioner's office that the subcommittee has proposed, and I'm not going to be proposing an amendment to the table. We've made that decision that we, how we're going to handle that, but that is an area that needs, I think, some further evaluation on through the process, and I'll be asking if that be done.
I'll leave that component open.
Okay, great. I appreciate
that. That is with the motion, if the motion provides for it.
Yeah, I would like to have a chance to discuss with the commissioner that impact.
Commissioner can't be here this morning. He asked me to put off resources till today. I didn't realize he wouldn't be here till 10 o'clock today. I think he has a substantial reason for being gone. I'm perfectly willing to personally have that, leave that particular component open.
Great.
You have the floor, Senator.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions also. First, I assume that Senator Menard has pretty much got his allocation used up, huh, in this budget?
I'm going to presume he does.
Okay. The other, I had been in touch, or people have been in touch with me on the surveyors and the reductions in the survey office. I don't claim to know a lot about that. There is some interaction between the capital budget and the operating budget. We're evaluating a significant proposal for surveying in the capital budget by DNR. And I guess I just would be just have a question on your thoughts as to what reductions are substantiated, or what are they being proposed for the survey component in the budget before us.
One also in the addendum here, this intent letter may partially cover what the administration, I believe, is generally thinking. One by Senator Ewing. Anna, do you want to give us a direct, I can come off from my sheet, a direct bit of backup for the survey component?
The survey component was requested by Land and Water Department in restructuring the cadastral survey and privatization, which they felt had been in intent language in the past by the legislature, and that they actually wanted to move on that intent language. The other, I know that the House restored some two of those positions. We decided, we got a legal opinion from Legislative Legal. There was some question as to whether we could do this or not, and Legislative Legal basically decided that, yes, that they could do it. The main objection was they thought it was bad management, and the legislature said that, you know, you have a right to be a bad manager as well as a good manager. That was the objection by the employees' union, was that they thought it was bad management. But the we tended to go along with the Division of Land and Water on those cuts that the department wants to make an attempt to privatize. We thought that we should be doing that leeway. If indeed there turns out to be some other problems, the department still wants the right to pursue those positions on actually.
I question, of course, my philosophy is this: a well-managed government agency can be quite as efficient as I've observed the private sector to be. I mean, you know, we started out with a $900 million pipeline, too, and it ended up in $10 billion, which we're paying a nice chunk of the overhead. But we went along with it because the commissioner's testimony to the subcommittee and all, under question, was that he could live and did support this budget. He made a very strong presentation that he did do so in this regard also.
I would just suggest that this is an area we probably need to watch closely. Okay. It's still doubtful whether or not we can do this without, or, you know, do the normal work of DNR without in-house surveyors. It seems like that we'll probably be revisiting this issue again on
I'm
whether or not they
I'm absolutely convinced we are, too. In fact, the last time I had this budget, I put in cadastral surveyors. It was my responsibility, so maybe I should say the legislature put it in. I think there will be several components of DNR that will be brought up before us in time to come. Half the people in Alaska, I suspect, or some good part of people in Alaska really work for the state. They just don't have PCN numbers, and they claim to be in the private sector. You know, I'm not sure it saves us any money.
Mr. Chairman, just one other comment. I don't know if we want to take any action at this time, but I know there is some concern over the deletion of the Citizen Advisory Council.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that is up to this committee. I know we've had a pretty tight budget, so it doesn't jump. Senator Ferencamp, though, is the exception to the rule, because Senator Ferencamp, for good Lord reasons that she certainly couldn't avoid, couldn't be here to strongly represent or be an advocate. So I think this is one of those never, 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 but with exception. And if there's a strong feeling of this addition, my understanding it is in the House version, or if there's some strong direction to the free conference committee, either one, I don't have a strong position on it. I just went with the administration in this regard.
I to paraphrase Senator Duncan's words here earlier, I think that's an area where we want to keep open a little bit and think about that, particularly in conference, as you suggest.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
you have a question.
Is this new group of, is this new commission that's been established, or has this been?
It's been around.
Old.
This is
been around.
Anna, come forward. We bring your chair up.
Give me a plan. Walrus Commission?
No, the Friendly Commission.
Yeah, that is the commission that has been negotiating and pushing for various resource items, had strong position. I think Senator Ferencamp chaired it. I believe the majority leader had chaired it one time or another. Some people feel it has a value. Others are wondering if we should spend that kind of money. I just went with the administration overview, but I also knew that the House had added it subsequent to the time that we went with the cuts. Senator Schultz?
That group has been pretty effective in accomplishing access into parks, having an impact on the hunting and fishing and trapping within the park system. And I'm not so certain that this shouldn't be assumed just normally by the Department of Natural Resources protecting the citizens' rights or the rights into the park. So I support the group, and we've had several meetings in the interior where this advisory group has taken the time to come out and assert their influence and take time to address problems that we've had in preserves and parks and things like the state.
Mr. Chairman, was there a request that came in from the administration as well on this, or just?
I don't remember getting any requests from the administration, but maybe we did get one. Yeah. The governor cut
deleted,
it.
They deleted it.
But we didn't have any requests for restoration at that level, to my knowledge.
Maybe we could take
nothing
some
in my file.
Forest
and I, in that particular case, I think you have to make exception. If there is a motion to table for restoration, gentlemen, I think this is appropriate because Senator Ferencamp was not here. I think everybody else has been here during the period of time, and I don't object to that particular motion. Particularly, it's the subcommittee I'm chairing, so it further gives credibility to that motion. That's up to the committee as far as I'm concerned. I bring it before you. You have the floor, Senator.
I would move that the money be restored.
The federal legislature department established a task force in conjunction with other state entities, appropriate public and private entities, to consider and resolve access and right-of-way issues. And I know that you have them in your area, to state land subdivisions and other areas that serve a public purpose. Whether it's parks or whatever, we do have some lands that have been TA'd to Native corporations, we have private lands, et cetera, and I'm just asking that internally they address this problem.
I'd like to speak to that.
Sure.
I think it should include what's been going on for years in right of way. The agencies have taken right of way under the right of taking and haven't used that right of way they've taken for 25 and 30 years. But they have allowed, under present state law, utility corridors for every conceivable utility to go through. Essentially, they're taking the people's property, they're not using it for the purposes taken, and they've denied the people the benefits of the utility corridors, including their land values. And While doing so, they cost the state an enormous amount of money because the state will now have to move those utilities at the state expense if they ever do use those right-of-ways that were taken. And I think we need to address that, and I hope this group will, because I am the strong opponent of what's been going on. People also come in and take years in advance certain segments, not from one end to the other, of a highway program too. And it may be good for the state, it may not be good for the state, but in any event, the one thing that I strongly object to is not utilizing something that's been just come in and taken. And then the taxpayers are still going to be the sack holders because they're going to have to move off all these utilities, tens of millions of dollars. Last year, I think we spent $15 million moving utilities off of our own right-of-ways. It's got to stop. Also, if the state starts to take corridors, they should have to use them in some reasonable period of time, not let it go 25 years. I'm very angry about that. And I think this group ought to come up with some negotiations within the department, look at the fairness doctrine. And I think this new administration might well be of a mood to do so. So I support this with that caveat.
The in the next letter to Kent is all regions, M&O, and it is the 10th Legislative Department in conjunction with other state entities identify, acquire rights, and further establish sufficient gravel and other construction aggregate reserves for maintaining our transportation facilities. Over the years, as you go down the highway corridors, we have lost many borrowings and lost access to them, and we need to make a concerted effort to be able to get these. I know that the Department of Transportation has done this in the past, but I think we need to make more of a concerted effort because we're running out of some areas and access to gravel in some areas, and I'd like to see them make a concerted effort to do this.
Your experience and mine is the same, and I might also contribute just a moment. Well, in Department of Natural Resources, we're too asking to locate, identify on a 100-year pattern the potential needs along corridors, predictable and present, and transfer those to DOT. I want them to physically be owned by that particular agency so that we're not buying gravel or they're not putting buildings and forever denying gravel within any reasonable access. We hauled gravel 20 miles because we let somebody homestead the only gravel pit in one area in my district. It's preposterous.
So they would have the opportunity to work with the Department of Natural Resources and, you know,
the two agencies have to work together, and I do hope, again, the new administration makes some effort. I've been 20 years ineffective in this. Good luck.
In the interior highways, the interior district is the second to the last one is the intent legislative department utilizing existing funds with the allocation for the maintenance of Taylor Highway from March 15th through November 15th. That's approximately...
6 weeks longer?
No, 2 weeks on each end.
What is that?
November 30th through April
30th. What is the cost of that, in your opinion? We did add extra maintenance funds this year.
Yeah, we put in about $45,000 the last time we did that. It was 3 years ago, I believe.
And you've got it done,
right?
What is the final?
And the primary reason for that is it allows the mining community to get access back into the Taylor Highway. They need to get back in as they go out across the country and get back into the 40 miles that are very environmentally sensitive, et cetera. And this is, you know, this about April 1st is the time to move equipment. And it gives them a 2-week period over.
I did the same thing you did 1 year during the Meegan administration, called an earlier opening because there are a whole lot of miners trying to get out there. So I understand it. I know the area well. I think we probably have all traveled.
And
finally, what is your...
The last one speaks exclusively to the intent of the legislature that the allocation for deferred maintenance of the $1.75 million. And I would like to change that after where it says $400,000. I would like to say at least $400,000 shall be used to create gravel and construction aggregate stockpiles for the use of the interior highway. And
You amend that to saying at least $400,000.
Right, yeah. At least $400,000.
Do you move these?
Yes, I do.
Is there objection? So ordered, they're done.
Yours. Don't worry about the number, but we spent a lot of time in the camp.
Is there a motion on the budget?
Yes, Chair. I would move Nash Jan's consent that the DOT budget be adopted.
No objection is adopted with the... We have a couple minutes. Military Affairs next, and then we'll adjourn.
Can you do Military Affairs first?
Military Affairs first. Military Veterans Affairs is on the table.
Okay.
Time for public comment is over. It's before the committee, and you have the, Mr. Chairman, Senator Schultz, you have the...
No.
Oh, I'm, excuse me, mm-hmm. Senator Hoffman.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Senator Hoffman.
I was setting up.
Sorry, Senator Hoffman.
Give me the script.
I forgot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is the Third World Army here.
The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs budget has very few modifications to it. We did go ahead and adopt the total amount of funds that were suggested by the governor's amended budget of $10,201,000 of general fund monies. The basic theme of the Senate budget is maintaining the military readiness and to maintain services for disaster preparedness and to assist the veterans of our state. There are two small differences between the House and the Senate numbers. The Senate approved the governor's amended numbers except for an adjustment identical to the House action. The House adopted an additional $40,000 in grants for the veterans service officers. The disaster relief fund amount of $3.4 million in the 1991 authorized amount was adopted by the House as compared to $3 million in the Senate figure. And the House and the Senate adjusted the Army Guard Facility maintenance budget of $144,000 as necessary for the Bethel leasing facilities, and this was identified by the Adjutant General as a critical issue that should be addressed because of the extremely undersized available space both in Nome and in Bethel, and in discussions with that my office had with the department, this change would not affect the needs of the Army facility maintenance budget. The additional requests that came to the committee were federal funds that were requested by the governor's office, and they are delineated on the bottom. They're all federal funds.
Other questions? You have the floor.
I would just remark that the monies for the Bethel Nome office were stolen from the Anchorage Armory, but that's okay.
They weren't stolen. They were stolen.
Mr. Chairman,
on choice of words.
I think it'll work out.
Mr. Chairman, on the intent, I'd like to have the opportunity to come back and perhaps offer one item of intent. The transference of the emergency services. I mean, the core of the earthquake last time was the Blue Pay in Anchorage. They're tending to transfer from the Matanuska Susitna area the EMS, emergency services, whatever you want to call them, disaster relief control agency to Anchorage. And I want to take one more look at that. And I may wish to put intent in there in opposition. I can sort of understand Senator Duncan at times.
Fine, Mr. Chimes.
That's encouraging.
Depends on whose ox is gore.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Military and Veterans Affairs budget be adopted in House Bill 75.
Is there any objection? No, it's a very, very similar continuation. You have the floor?
As well as the intent.
Motion is to adopt the intent. Is there objection? No objection. Intent adopted.
Ready for law?
Next one's before us in law. We do have that one little area with the potential opening.
Right. Left. Mr. Chairman, they're being passed around for the Department of Law. They're being passed around a one-page summary, explanation of the recommendation on Department of Law, and it compares the Senate recommendation to changes that we're recommending from the subcommittee to the governor's amended general fund budget. The governor had recommended the general fund budget of $35,139,100 for the Department of Law. You, Mr. Chairman, had given us a cap of $36 million. We have a general fund amount of $31,852.8, which is $4,147,200 under the Senate cap. But before we get too excited, I'll explain why we're that low. Let me start with the governor's amended budget of $35,139.1. The subcommittee added or restored the 2% vacancy factor to the budget. Overall, that amounted to $294,700. Added one new component to the Department of Law's budget. That's on page 24. It's a Medicaid provider fraud unit that was requested by the Department of Law. It's for $72,000 in general fund. It does bring in federal dollars also to fund that unit. I have a memo from the Department of Law making that request. They have been working in conjunction with the Department of Health and Social Services, and it is a needed area. We then did change the funding source for the Exxon Valdez Litigation Fund. Exxon Valdez Litigation, that funding source change was from all general fund to half general fund and half interagency receipts. $3,653.1 decrease. The House, on the other hand, just for your information, made that all interagency receipts, all out of 470 fund, 100%. The advice from the Department of Law that probably was way too much to do, and we've had that discussion before, I think even on the floor of the Senate. So we believe that 50% is the maximum amount that we can fund from that source. Therefore, it was, that's why only the decrease of 3,653.1. So the Senate General Fund total, $31,852.8. And as I said, the subcommittee or the proposed cap was $36 million, but the major reason we came under that cap was because of the change in funding source. Would also like to note two or three other areas that we need to bring to the attention of the subcommittee. On the bottom of this sheet, there is a note that there are some mental health funds in the law budget. Those are not increments, those were in the base. And I think we've checked with the mental health subcommittee on that. So those are included in here. There are six new positions in the law budget. Those are all in the new Medicaid provider fraud unit. Let me point out a couple of areas, though, that we need to be aware of. If I could refer you to the second judicial district, which is on page, and this just came to our attention this morning, which is on page 8 of the short form. That judicial district is the one that Senator Adams is in Senator Adams' district. There was a request for some new positions, paralegal assistants and barrel. It was our understanding that when we put the budget together and we checked with Senator Adams' office to be sure they had concurred in this, that those positions were added in the House budget. And they were added in the House budget. Unfortunately, they were added in the wrong judicial district. And we didn't catch that until this morning, I guess. But I think we might check with OMB and Mr. Pegues. I believe that they can administratively handle the transfer of those positions from the 4th Judicial District to 2nd Judicial District, so we don't have to make any change in the budget document here, because in Commerce Committee you won't have the flexibility of adding them to the 2nd, because they're not there at all, but that's where they should be. And I see heads nodding in concurrence that they can administratively make that transfer. We might even want to add some intent at some point. That's what's to happen, but that would be, could be added at a later time.
And we did add, one position to three different judicial districts over in the criminal and prosecution, one each? Sort of my memory as it went by.
No, but the new positions that we've added in this budget are the...
Just the fraud unit?
Fraud unit, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, of course,
am I correct,
you?
Mr. Pegues? Yeah, I'm correct.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just on the fraud unit, there's six positions that it's mentioned here that we're adding. Six positions plus another position, so seven.
Six positions plus another position, what do you mean?
The one that you're speaking for Senator Adams?
No, the one that we're speaking for Senator Adams, we're not adding in this budget. What my point was on the Senator Adams position was they are in the House budget. We didn't include them in the Senate budget. Unfortunately, the House put them in the wrong judicial district.
So we're only, Mr. Chairman, talking about six?
We're talking about six positions, yes.
Senator Adams, you have the floor.
Yes, the six positions is the Medicaid provider fraud unit, and the only question I have to this, it's not in the House budget, it hasn't been requested by the department, or where did this one unit come from? That's one question.
Now, this did come as a request from the Department of Law in a memo to me, or a letter to me of April 5th, signed by the Attorney General, about the necessity for the Medicaid fraud unit, and seemed to make sense to me. It generates, I'm sorry I didn't have copies of this made, I'm sure it won't staff here today, but it brings in federal receipts, I think $150,000 in federal receipts, and it's a $72,000 expenditure of general funds, and it seems to be an important area.
Apparently, when the medical practitioners wear their business hat, they act like all too many others at times, those exceptional, occasional people do. And apparently there's quite a bit of problem out there in this region. And the feds recognize it, and the state itself has some, I think we've even seen some headlines on it, or at least a bunch of these articles on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Overcharging, so on.
Yeah, Mr. Piggies, so I understand. I see we're getting a pretty good bargain, I guess, on the federal funds and so on, but it still requires six people to, because there's such an overwhelming
federal
fraud going on.
No.
Senator Piggies, please come
federal
forward.
Federal regulations require some positions.
There are a minimal number of positions, but beyond that, what really caused this to happen was an event that I really can't discuss in any detail at all, of very substantial fraud. Type of thing that investigators and auditors have to quarrel for months and goes back years. It's really big dollars, and that's the stack. We have to have a senior investigator, an auditor, an attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just to specify the federal rate. But we know from the one case that's before us now that will consume the whole staff for a long time, for like even months, something else.
As part of the escalation of medical expenditures, it's going up like that, 20% of GNP, you say, 2000.
Okay, and one other point, if there's no further questions on that, Mr. Chairman, there has been a subsequent request from the administration. We don't have it in a formal letter yet, but we've had a request from supposedly through OMB for some added attorneys for natural resources reasons. Primarily.
That's right.
Nine attorneys for natural resources in the natural resources area, one attorney in the general government area. That's still being evaluated. We're still looking for some information on that, and I just want to bring that to the attention of the committee. That might be an area that at a subsequent time we want to revisit. No.
It came to the senator and came to me, and I went down and spoke to the governor briefly about it. The natural resources attorneys may well be, maybe three of them, very, very important.
They're not in here yet, so we just to put the committee on notice that
might need an amendment.
We might need an amendment at some point.
Are there further questions on this? Is there a motion?
Chairman, I would move that we adopt the subcommittee's recommendation on the Department of Law budget. Roll into the big
adopted. What time are we starting closeouts on Monday? It's 9 o'clock Monday. And we have an 11 o'clock session Monday. We'll be back at 9. Maybe we all ought to meet in my office for a couple minutes so we don't have to impact Monday. Just go over things. Maybe we could do that now. There's no objection.